Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips in North Carolina. This week we're talking about, well, Brexit again, and Trump again, and we're also talking about riots in France. We're talking about Ukraine. We're talking about Mexico. We're talking about the German economy, and finally, dumb smugglers in Portugal. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio visiting with us this afternoon. As always, to remind you, this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule since he's there in London, England, some 5 hours ahead of us. Tom, recognizing that you are some 5 hours ahead of us, but also probably a little bit ahead of us in the way of weather, first thing, what's happening there in the United Kingdom, particularly in your fair town of London?
Well, to start with, I'm way ahead of you in lots of other areas, too.
No, only in time, but that's it.
We're having, it's not too bad at this moment, but we're having Storm Diana. And in the west part of the country, we've had gale force winds of 70, 80 miles an hour.
My goodness.
And the trains are stopping and everyone's holding on to their hats.
Is this normal weather for you all?
We will often have in the winter gales.
Okay.
Winter is gale. It's winds and rain. You hunker down, you go inside, you build a nice fire,
mm-hmm.
you make yourself a cup of tea, and then you put some scotch in it.
All right.
And
The scotch is important. And then quick question. Of course, we're getting into the holiday season. As a matter of fact, Thanksgiving is predominantly an American institution, but I'm curious. Now that we're past that time frame, we're looking at the beginning of December, does the holiday season kick in there in the United Kingdom and rest of Europe?
Yeah, well, we haven't gotten around, except my particular family, to importing Thanksgiving. But they did, a few years ago, import Black Friday.
Oh, really?
Yes. Black Friday is very big here.
It
involves money, you see.
Oh, yeah. Well, and so it's a commercial success, in other words. I shouldn't say success, but it's a commercial event.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, it is. It's very much a commercial event.
In some regards, that's a little sad. By the way, we'll get into this issue in a few minutes. We're going to be talking about Mr. Zuckerberg and Google and Amazon and the like related to a European Council hearing. But a question about things such as Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, or Giving Tuesday. What about those kind of events in addition to that?
Oh, I think we probably have those. Be honest, I don't really pay any attention to
okay.
it. Maybe I should.
No, well, well, in light of the fact that you've got a lot going on right now in the United Kingdom, and particularly there in London in relationship to politics, let's move on to that here in a moment. But I'm going to stay with you, the issue of the United States, for the beginning of the program this afternoon with you, Tom. Let's talk about the events here in the United States. Last week, the announcement related to a climate report. It was released, interestingly enough, Thanksgiving Day. How is that reported there in the United Kingdom?
Well, it was reported. It was headline news here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Trump's response to it was also headline news. But it was totally expected response. What people are saying is, Trump is an expert on forest fire management. Trump is an expert on car manufacturing. Trump is an expert on climate change obviously.
What would you
He has no end of talents.
What would you expect?
There's no need for experts.
What would you
expect? But his own government report, says he's wrong.
Well, what would you expect? He's president of the United States. I mean, he's leader of the free world. We expect him to know all this.
Well, I expected to use the argument, as president of the United States, he has access to all sorts of government reports.
He does.
And by the way, my retort is,
But the government reports tell him one thing that he doesn't agree with.
But interestingly enough, there were counter reports associated with the topic of the temperature ranges that have been released of late. But I don't want to get into the issue of the topic of climate change per se, just how it's being reported. Another item associated with items in the states, and we'll get into the issue of the what we are describing here as an invasion. But what about the topic, since you brought up the topic of economics, General Motors, the announcement that they're going to be closing several plants here and in Canada, as a matter of fact. What was the coverage there?
And South Korea. Again, coverage. And it's been reported fairly straight. A few people have made note of the fact that it does throw a bit of a spanner in Trump's claims that he is, creating jobs. I think that's probably unfair, because if you look at what is happening, General Motors says that they have to retool. They need the money to make more electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that.
And innovation, yes.
Mm-hmm. Innovation. So they've got to cut back in order to expand. And I think that it's just a problem of business people versus politics. Trump has made a political promise, and General Motors has to answer to their shareholders.
And, of course, one of those shareholders, thanks to
Donald Trump.
Well, previous administration is the taxpayers of the United States, in light of the fact that President Obama took over General Motors, quite frankly, practically nationalizing the business. But we'll not belabor.
Which makes it difficult. Mixing politics and business is a very difficult thing to do.
We get into the issue of politics and incentives as well. All right. And one other item before we get to topics associated with the United Kingdom, that being the events happening down in south of the border, with Mexico, U.S. border, the asylum seekers, and what some of us would describe as an invasion in light of the fact that they're crashing the borders. But how is that being reported again there in the United Kingdom and in Europe?
It's being reported fairly straight, Donald Trump has ordered the use of tear gas.
As did his predecessor.
There's not much that the Europeans can say. What the president has said is that he wants to set up camps on the Mexican side of the border.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in those camps, they would assess whether or not they had a legitimate claim to refugee status or asylum status. And those that did would be allowed in. And Europeans have similar arrangements in Turkey and Jordan and Lebanon they're trying to set up those arrangements now in places like Libya and Chad. And it does seem, under international law, if a person has a legitimate claim to political asylum, then you have to grant it to them. If they claim to be an economic migrant,
okay,
you do not have to grant them entry.
Okay, that you clarified something very quickly. I was going to ask you the question: what is the document? What is the precept for asylum? Another quick question for you associated with this: former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and of course also the former First Lady, was on the hustings recently, and she was, I gather, was in Europe and sort of counseled, for want of a better description, the European leaders that they needed to do something about the issue of immigration, asylum seekers, as a result of the growing nationalist pride and nationalist interest there in the European communities. How was that reported? Did that get much coverage?
I didn't see much coverage of that.
Interesting.
I try and read the papers every day, but and listen to the news.
It got very little.
I become a news junkie, as you can appreciate. Or I have to be. I miss that. Michelle Obama's over here pushing her book.
Right.
But and you know, she's doing a very good job of it. She's being well received.
That's another aspect of this. And let me interrupt you here. We've got very brief coverage here in the United States as well. And this is, of course, for Hillary Clinton we're talking about, counseling the European community about addressing issue of immigration, saying that that's the cause for the rise of nationalism. She being, well, I would argue quickly, a globalist. But it is also interesting, as you just pointed out, Tom, that Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton both have competing interests in appearing in the public. And apparently, former First Lady Michelle Obama seems to be heads away from Hillary Clinton, doing very well, apparently.
Well, she was the First Lady.
Right, and so was Hillary Clinton.
I think Michelle Obama comes over as a genuinely nice person, at least she does over here.
And Hillary Clinton doesn't?
And slightly above the political fray.
Okay. All right. I think that's an important observation. Tom, we're going to take a quick break. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here with us with Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon. Tom, we were chatting a moment ago about, of course, the role of events here in the United States. I've got to move on to issues associated with the European community, but you have a note here about Trump and Brexit, and I think we're going to spend a good portion of the time on the future of Brexit, and that, of course, is Britain's exit from the European community. But the relationship of Trump and Brexit, help us out, if you will.
Well, as you know, Trump has said that it's a good deal for the EU, not such a good deal for Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also said that he's been advised that as it stands now, it's going to make negotiating any trade deals between an out of EU Britain and the US a bit more difficult. I think he's right. Mrs. May is very dismayed about this because she was counting on Donald Trump coming to her aid. It's a bit like Obama when he got involved in the Brexit debate and said that the UK will be going to the back of the queue. And so, therefore, you should vote to stay in the EU. Well, effectively, Trump has said more or less the same thing, except what he's saying is, don't stay in the EU. Just go for no deal. And then we can do a deal with you. That unfortunately, however, if we widen it out, all the economists are saying that any Brexit deal will cost the British people money, that the economy will shrink. And it's going to shrink at least 1% a year for the next 10 or 15 years with Mrs. May's proposal as it stands at the moment. If we go for a no-deal Brexit, it will shrink by 7 to 10%, they say.
You know, the aspect of this, and one that we here in the States have a difficult time grasping, at least say we, I for sure, and that, of course, is the fact that the United Kingdom, Great Britain, United Kingdom, is at the mercy of an organization over which they have no influence or control.
That's not true.
Well, the European...
That's not true.
How so?
They are part of... They are...
Yeah, but...
It's like saying North Carolina... But, is at the mercy of the federal government.
But
they are part of the federal government.
There are some aspects of this.
No, they're part of the EU.
Well,
they voluntarily join the EU. They're part of it. The EU has a parliament.
You know,
the European Commission is appointed by the national by representatives of the national parliaments. Each cabinet minister has a council to which they attend and discuss their particular issues. It's not true.
But a question.
They have to share. They pool.
All right,
power in much the same way as North Carolina pools its power and resources with 49 other states.
All right, I don't quite feel the comfort factor that you do in that regard, but let me bring up another question here. I'm going to bring up another question with you, Tom. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. What role did the issue of the asylum seekers, the immigration issue, and the free flow of immigrants across the European community, what role did that play in Brexit? Does it play?
It had a very big role because, you know, Britain is a small country,
mm-hmm.
And it's a crowded country. It's the most densely populated country in Europe. And so there isn't much scope for taking on more people. And what happened was when we had free movement of people and the European Union, and especially when we had Eastern Europe
mm-hmm.
join the European Union, people in Romania, Bulgaria, countries like that, they could earn a lot more money in this country and remit money home.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had 300,000 people
wow.
coming from Eastern Europe to this country. Now, what's not particularly noticed as much is that we still have full employment. So they were doing jobs which a lot of British people didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They were picking potatoes and carrots
right.
up out of the fields. They were cleaning toilets.
Right. So
they were working as hospital porters, things like that.
But
they were the British equivalent of the pool cleaners.
Right. But okay. But so it did have an impact, though, on the decision to leave the European community.
Absolutely.
All right.
And some people say it had a bigger decision. And Mrs. May is stressing that in trying to sell her Brexit deal, that immigration will end.
Let's talk about the sale of the Brexit deal by Mrs. May. And by the way, I have to say, contrary to your expectations, this deal has been moving along. You've seen an approval from the European Union. They've given it tacit approval. I know that she's got to bring it back to the United Kingdom, to Parliament. What's the future on this?
At the moment, the arithmetic doesn't add up.
Meaning the finances you're talking about?
That at the moment, it looks as if it would lose by 60 votes.
Oh,
and that's
okay.
a big difference.
Okay.
60 votes she needs to win.
Okay, so...
And she doesn't know where she's going to get them. What she's doing is she's touring the country. She's going from speaking engagement to speaking engagement, trying to go over the heads of the members of parliament
mm-hmm.
directly to the constituents
mm-hmm.
and arguing on local radio and in focus groups and in rallies and things like that.
And how is she doing?
That her deal is the best that can be done.
And how is she doing?
It may not be perfect, but it's the best that is available.
And how is she doing?
Not very well.
Okay, now, when is the decision? When does the decision have to be made?
She keeps being hit by these reports that keep coming out, which saying it may be the best can be done, but it's pretty bad.
Okay, but when is...
If the best that can be done is, you know, a contraction in the economy of a minimum of 2 or 3% a year as a result of her deal, then why are we leaving?
All right. When does the decision have to be made by Parliament?
There's going to be a vote on December the 11th. If the vote goes against, then I think on the 21st of January, Mrs. May's government has to put forward an alternative plan about how to proceed from there. Now, at the moment, there's a court case up before the European Court of Justice to decide whether or not they can reverse Article 50, which basically set in motion the departure from the EU. So that if the court agrees that that can be done, then one of the options that could be available to the government is to completely scupper the whole process and decide not to leave the EU
okay.
without having a second referendum.
Okay, you're talking about Great Britain dropping it altogether. Well, I don't get the understanding. I don't understand the reversal of Article 50. Why is that case before the court?
Because various members of parliament and members of the European Parliament have basically taken it to the court. Remember, we're in uncharted waters here. Uh-huh. There's no precedent for this sort of thing.
Right, right.
And the way it was set out in the Lisbon Treaty, which set up the European Union, if someone wants to leave, they have to invoke something called Article 50.
Right.
And that sets in process a negotiating process, which takes 2 years, during which period they negotiate how they're going to leave and the bare bones of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that once that Article 50 is invoked, it's irreversible. You leave at the end of 2 years.
Okay.
That's the idea. And so what has been taken to the European Court of Justice is that you make it reversible.
Oh, my goodness.
Instead of irreversible, that the parliament of the government that wants or country that wants to leave can say, we've changed our
okay,
mind.
Okay, it's just, okay. It just yep. basically gives it yet an alternative. All right, we're going to get back to more on this in just a moment because we've also got to look at what's happening to the European economy as well, since we're hearing bad things for the United Kingdom's economy, Great Britain's. But what about France and Germany? Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from Look Ahead News. They know everything. That is why they were elected to high office. President Trump is not only a high-flying real estate tycoon, he is also a top-flight climatologist, superb firefighter, expert military strategist, brilliant constitutional lawyer, intelligence supremo, trade negotiator without equal, and peerless economist. Brexiteer Boris Johnson's years as a scribe and Jacob Rees-Mogg's banking experience have clearly made them detailed specialists on every aspect of British life likely to be touched by Brexit, which is everything. The knowledge of these men is truly staggering. They could save British and American taxpayers hundreds of billions of pounds and dollars by dismissing great swathes of civil servants. It is clear that those highly paid, quote, experts, end quote, at the Bank of England, British Treasury, and the Office of National Statistics are at best ill-informed, stupid, or just plain dumb. At worst, they are the enemy within, or enemies of the people. As Prime Minister Theresa May continues her whistle-stop tour around Britain to sell her best deal possible Brexit plan, civil servants have been lining up to point out the gaping pitfalls in her plan and the chasms if Britain goes for the no-deal alternative advocated by Jacob, Boris and co. Every single government department and a number of independent think tanks say that Britain will be worse off leaving the EU whichever route is taken. The no-deal plan would shrink the economy by 8-9% overnight, slash house prices by 30%, cost £100 billion, and collapse the pound by 25%. All of these dire warnings from every quarter of every government department have been branded Project Hysteria by the High Priest of Brexit, Jacob Rees-Mogg. His acolytes at the Daily Express urged its readers to ignore their paid advisers, as they have been proven wrong time and again. Britain has one of the most competent civil services in the world. The world's oldest civil service is Chinese. It started in the 3rd century BC and became an object of admiration for the British from the 17th century onwards. In 1829, they decided to give it a go in India when the patronage system was replaced by a civil service examination. It was a resounding success, and the system was adopted back in Britain in 1854. From there, it made its way across the empire and beyond. The civil service changed government appointments from a basis of who you know and/or how much you were prepared to pay for a position to an administration based on the then revolutionary idea of finding the best qualified person for the job. The result was a permanent, unified, and politically independent cadre of experts whose career depended on their expertise rather than the patronage of a politician. The system works like this. Every year, thousands of people take a civil service exam. If they pass, they're offered secure, well-paid positions with good pensions. Over the years, they develop a specific expertise in the government department to which they have been assigned, and as the expertise grows, so does their salary. Politicians are elected to office on the basis of their judgment and the policies that they present to the public. They are elected for their political beliefs, not for their expertise in a particular field. Once they are in office, they're advised by the civil service on the best way to implement those policies. A big part of the civil servant's job is to inform the politician and the wider public of the consequences of a policy decision. If they do not tell them, if they tailor their reports to suit their political masters, then they have failed. As for the politicians who ignore them or condemn their advice, well, my suggestion is that if they ever need a life-saving operation, they should consult their plumber.
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of lookaheadnews.com and Look Ahead Radio with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World, as I just mentioned a moment ago, pre-recorded to accommodate Tom's sleeping schedule. Tom, let's talk about the topic of the economies in Germany and France. We've got to talk about Ukraine. That's a big issue, and quite frankly, I think weighs into this conversation about the economies. But let's first start with France. I've been seeing stories about riots in France. The reason for the riots, increased cost of fuel. The reason for the increased cost of fuel is President Macron's promise to deal with global warming. And apparently the French people are not happy with the efforts on the part of the French government to address the issue of global warming. So
I think you've oversimplified it there.
No, okay.
It's not just global warming. You know, Macron said right from the beginning that he is going to deal with the problem of global warming, climate change, as far as France is concerned. And that's one of the things that got him elected.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing he said he was going to deal with was the issue of taxes and unemployment, and that he said taxes would have to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone says, yeah, great, yeah, yeah, that's fine. Well, like a lot of other things, you know, everyone says, yeah, let's do something about global warming. Let's do something about taxes.
Right.
As long as it doesn't affect me.
Right.
As long as everyone else's taxes go up, it's fine, but not mine.
Excuse me for interrupting, but just goes to show.
I think you have the same word there in America as we have here, which is NIMBYism, my backyard.
And it just goes to show that President Trump quickly ascertained the interest and feelings of the U.S. Community, and therein lies his reason for backing away from the climate accord.
No,
but continue on.
I'll disagree. I think, again, you're oversimplifying.
No.
But in the case, basically, everyone thinks,
it's not in my backyard.
Done. They just don't want to be paying for it. Now, France has a tradition of mass protests as a form of political expression.
Yeah, riots. We call them riots here in the United States.
Yeah,
massive
riots.
You
call them riots. I think that's a very good description. You know, if the farmers don't like something's going to be happening, all of them just roll their tractors onto the roads and stop all the traffic in France for a week or two until the president caves in.
Right.
And this form of mass protest has been around for a long, long time, and usually the president backs down.
And will he this time?
Well, Macron says he's not going to back down. And it's going to be very interesting. He has absolutely said, I understand your feelings. I don't like paying more taxes either.
But
I understand how you feel. I also understand how you feel about climate change. I want to improve things, but, you know, I'd rather it was done in such a way that, you know, it wouldn't affect anybody.
It's just...
But, you know, with gain comes a bit of pain.
Well,
and so, you know, I'm going to stick by my guns. Whether or not he will, whether he'll do everything else that every other president has done in recent history remains to be seen.
All right.
And I think he's likely to stick by his guns.
All right, let's talk about the economies of Europe. And this brings up the issue of Germany as well. First question, very quickly, the French economy, how is it doing in light of the fact
The French economy has been suffering for a long time. It's picked up. It's got a little bit of growth, but it's got very high unemployment. The people who are protesting, they have every right to protest. They're hurting.
Okay. Now,
it's not like the Great Depression or anything like that, but
in comparison,
by no means, booming.
Okay. In comparison to the United Kingdom, which we talked about at great length a few minutes ago about the, decline in its economy, how does the United Kingdom compare very quickly now to the economies of France and Germany? And then I'm going to move to Germany.
Well, Germany is much better off.
Okay.
And Britain is a little bit better off than France, I'd say.
All right. Now, the German economy apparently is slowing. How come?
The German economy, they actually shrank by 0.2% in the third quarter of this year.
Okay.
Now, this is regarded as a one-off due to regulations that have been brought in to regulate car emissions in the wake of the Volkswagen scandal.
Global warming.
And so there was a big cost to the... Right. The car industry, which is a big part of the German economy, and it was seen as a one-off thing. So it's going to rebound a bit in the fourth quarter this year. But all the predictions are that the economy will be much slower this coming year than it has been this year. Growth of between 1.25 and 1.5%, which is really pretty not that good.
Okay.
It's all right. This is going to put a lot of strains on the coalition because one of the keys is the Social Democratic Party, and they went into the coalition telling people that we're going in order to give away more things, to create more mm-hmm. social service projects right. and things like that.
Well,
they're not going to have the money to do it.
And the social programs, both in France and Germany, but definitely in France, have been pretty horrendous. We've talked about that in the past. I want to go back to the issue, and we're going to move to the Ukraine here in a moment. But I want to go back to the issue of the British economy. If the British economy is going to decline significantly, as you've pointed out a few moments ago, it strikes me that some of this is automatically in the environment, not necessarily connected to Brexit. Very quickly, yes or no?
I don't see what connection is with the environment.
Environment, I say the environment, the economic environment. The economic environment around basically Europe is seeing a shall we say, a maturity of the recent growth spate that it's experienced.
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. Obviously, 45% of Britain's trade is with the European continent. But two or three years ago, the British economy was growing at 3.5% when the EU economy was growing at 0.8%.
Okay, so I'm skeptical. Let me just finish with, I'm skeptical about the overall negative impact of the British exit from the European Union. And of course, there are still a lot of decisions to be made.
Well,
as
then
you
disagree with every economist who's out there, and you do agree with the former, with the cabinet minister, Michael Gove, who says, experts, the British public is sick of experts.
You know what? I will tell you that many voters and taxpayers are fed up with experts.
I suggest is next time you're in operation, hire your plumber.
I will do so because they probably was a former surgeon who's making more money as a plumber. I want to move to the issue of Ukraine. This is an important issue. We're looking at a potential armed conflict there. What is Europe seeing there in the Ukraine in light of the fact that Russia has shut down the entry into the shallowest sea in the world, as a matter of fact?
Europe is very worried. And they're worried that they could be dragged into this because mm-hmm. they have a lot of EU-registered ships. Mm-hmm. I say no EU registration, but French, German, British, right. etc., who go through the Kerch Straits into the Sea of Azov from the Black Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment that is blocked, and it's clear that what Russia is trying to do is to gain complete and total control of the Sea of Azov and total international recognition of Crimea.
Right. And the control of
now,
Cuba.
All this is contrary to every treaty and international law and everything else.
So what are they going to do about it?
What? The European Union?
Yes.
Well, you know, all we can do at the moment, you know, I can't say what they're going to do about it. They haven't decided. It's only just started. But I should think that it's going to be absolute top of the agenda at the G20 summit. It's also going to be top of the agenda at European Council meeting and European Foreign Ministers meeting. And they have to do something about it. You know, have to back Ukraine.
Speaking of which, the president of the United States has said he's questioned whether or not he will meet with President Putin at the G20.
I have mixed feelings about that because, of course, he was going to meet and talk about nuclear weapons and the INF treaty, which needs to be talked about as a matter of urgency. You know, so that's gone back onto the back burner.
Let me remind you.
I can't see. I can't see how they can have normal relations with Russia blocking the Sea of Azov.
All right, now, Tom.
I think Trump would be right not to meet with him.
All right, Tom.
Although I think it would be a great pity.
Tom, very quickly. The issue goes to Germany and Germany's purchase of so much natural gas from Russia. Will Germany take any action? And can they afford to take any action?
Oh, yes, they can afford to take action. It remains to see. All right. I think they're going to have to tighten sanctions. I don't know what sanctions they will tighten.
Okay. So this is one of those issues. But
something will be done. I mean, they can't just turn a blind eye to it.
Well, no.
Of course, you know, President Trump has hinted in the past that perhaps they should just simply give up and recognize Russian control of Crimea, which I think would be another mistake.
I don't know that that's in the cards at this point. Before we move on, because we've got we're going to miss a lot of things today, but one of the items here has to do with China and the attack of Xi Jinping on human rights. What's the coverage there in the European community?
Well, what's interesting is, and most of the time, the European community or the West turns a blind eye to human rights abuses in China. Mm-hmm. Or they do. They make sort of noises but don't do anything about it because they need trade with China.
Mm-hmm.
You know, China is such an important trading partner for most people now. But what's happening in Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs, it's just so awful that they've actually had to do something about it. And they've got a number of Western ambassadors based in China who've gotten together and signed a letter and actually made a formal protest, which is rarely done, especially as a group, a formal protest to the Chinese government about what's happening in Xinjiang province. United States is not part of that protest. Neither is most of Southern Europe, and neither is New Zealand. I don't know why the U.S. isn't, possibly because they have their own problems with tariff talks.
The president is going to be possibly meeting with the premier, Xi Jinping, in the next few days. So maybe that conversation will be had at that time.
Yeah.
All right. I've got a quick question before we go to the break. We're about to go to a break here with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Recent stories appearing in the U.S. press about genetically engineered babies in China. I'm curious, has that had any coverage there in the European community? Is there any concern?
I haven't seen any coverage here.
Okay.
But it wouldn't surprise me. Boy children have always been prized above girls. It used to be the case that girls would literally be put out on the mountaintop and allowed to starve to death.
Right. No.
So if they now have the scientific means to ensure that someone is a boy instead of a girl, then I should think a lot of families would be opting for that.
Well, it's also
it's a culture.
Well, it
it's
is
a cultural thing.
It well, this other aspect of it is to basically remove genetic proclivities towards certain diseases as well. All right, we're going to get back to more here in just a moment with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. We're chatting with him some 5 hours ahead in his time schedule, so this portion has been pre-recorded for our broadcast. Tom, the recent efforts on the part of the European community to, shall we say, take grasp of the internet and digital media, and I know that there was a recent hearing in which Mr. Zuckerberg from Facebook was invited to attend and chose not to attend to such a degree that someone there took a picture of an empty chair. We chatted a few moments ago, well, earlier in the program, about the issue of Cyber Monday and the growth of cyber technology and the impacts it's having on economy, but also on personal information and personal security and privacy. I'm wondering, is this decision by Mr. Zuckerberg not to participate and or respond to questions possibly going to injure the future of his enterprise in the European community and for the enterprise of other members of the digital community?
Yes, and Google's coming under attack as well. What they had a number of countries. They had an international panel of parliamentarians mm-hmm. meeting here in London, and Zuckerberg was invited to speak and answer questions. Instead, he sent his sidekick, Lord Allam of Hallam, a lovely onomatopoetic name.
Mm-hmm. love and, that word. I'm an onomatopoetic. I love that. Keep going. Yes.
And difficult to pronounce that one, yes. Onomatopoetic. I've worked on it for ages. And some things came out of that, such as the fact that it seems that Facebook was aware of the Russians using Facebook and meddling in Facebook
mm-hmm.
back in 2014, mm-hmm. and yet did nothing about it. That came out in the course of the hearings. Lord Allam was saying things like, you know, if you're going to do something about Facebook, the only thing you can do is shut down the internet.
Mm.
And there is an element of truth in that. I think what you're heading for is some sort of monopoly breakup. I don't know how you're going to do it, but Facebook and Google become too powerful. The complaints about Google are that they are breaching the data protection regulations, right, which have recently come into force,
mm-hmm.
And that. That, you know, no sooner have they gone into force than they've basically found a way to get around them. And so there's complaints about Google along those lines.
I think this is a big story, and we'll be chatting about this in the future. Tom Arms, of course, with Look Ahead Radio and Look Ahead News with us this afternoon here on Viewpoints Around the World. Wrapping it up, Tom, always enjoy the final conclusion of our interview, the conclusion of it. Dumb smugglers?
Yeah. Well, you may not realize it, but Portugal is one of the largest exporters of olive oil in the world.
Okay.
One of the chief producers of olives and one of their biggest exports is olive oils. Just like, say, exporting oil from Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Petrol.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some would decide they were going to take some cocaine and dilute it in olive oil and export no. that to Portugal.
Oh.
Okay? And it's a bit like exporting oil to Saudi Arabia. The people at the customs in Portugal saw this come and said, who the hell would be importing olive oil into Portugal? And they did a quick check as to the final destination, realized that they were a bit shady, and pounded the olive oil and diluted out the cocaine that was in it.
You're going to smuggle your primary export product back into the country. Very interesting. Tom Harms with LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, where did these smugglers, what was their country origin of country, their country of origin?
By the U.S.
Oh, that worried me terribly. They failed miserably. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Tom, look forward to our conversation next week.
Bye-bye.
Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.